Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Thank you for joining us on another episode of Family Matters with Kenny and Kwajalein. This is Kwajalein, and here is my husband.
Hello, everybody.
Kenny. We thank you again for calling in. If we have any streamers out there, please give us a call at 657-383-1571 if you would like to join in on the conversation. Again, that's 657-383-1571. What about our boys? Education is a necessity in order to gain success within the United States. However, some believe that the education system is not tailored to fit boys, but is a better fit for girls. Boys of all races and ethnicities often struggle in school, while many girls do not. Is there a problem with the system? Are parents and educators doing enough to set boys up for success? Does the increasing number of ADHD diagnoses in boys play a factor in why boys struggle more than girls? Again, thank you for calling in on tonight, October the 14th, 2016, at 8 p.m. Eastern, for our Free Flow Friday. So we're going to go ahead and begin to open up the lines. We're going to start off with Keto, are you there?
Yes, ma'am.
How you doing tonight?
I'm doing well. I am definitely doing well. I've had a couple health issues for the past couple weeks, and it finally got diagnosed, so I'm doing well.
Well, good. Well, congratulations on that. Get it diagnosed, and now you can get it treated and be on your way. So good. It's good
yes,
to hear
ma'am.
From you tonight. Glad to have you on the line. And you know your line will be open.
Mm-hmm.
We look forward to hear what you have to
All
say.
Right. Yes, ma'am.
Pastor Michelle, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello. Hello, Pastor Kenny and Pastor Kwajalein. How are you?
Good.
Hey,
how are you doing?
On? What's up, Keto? How you doing?
Doing
Pastor Michelle?
Doing great. Excited about the show tonight.
Well, thank you for calling. I had to tell my friend Michelle Core about our show on Tuesday. I said, Pastor Michelle is going to always make sure she takes up for the men. Always.
That is not always true. 99.999% of the time.
Yeah. So you know your line will be open. We look forward to what you have to say. And I hope you send out your text message. No, let me stop.
Thank you. Yes, ma'am. I'm doing that now.
Doe, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. How everybody
doing? How you
doing?
We're doing good. How you doing?
Well, I'm here. So I'm doing pretty good. Just a little tired, but I'm here.
Yeah, man, you work like 3 jobs, don't you?
No mind.
Hey, man, I do what I do.
And school, so I know you are. Well, thank you for calling in on tonight. You know we have your line open, so we look forward to hearing what you have to say on our topic. All right, so let's go ahead and get into our topic. What about our boys? Now, there is a lot of people feel as though the schools are biased against boys, that they are not tailored for boys because we know on an average girls outperform boys in, you know, reading, spelling, math, and, you know, they they outperform boys on tests and schoolwork. And so we do see that a lot. It's not based on race or anything. This is something that is not, it doesn't matter the economic situation. This is something that is seen, you know, overall. You know, we're talking about the United States, but I think they also see this in other countries from what I read. So it's Free Flow Friday. We want to hear you guys talking. The first question is, do you all believe that schools are tailored for girls? Are they biased against boys? What do you guys think?
I don't necessarily think that they are biased against boys. I mean, because they learn in the same curriculum. I just think, oh, no, man, boys and girls, are they different. You know, being the boy who struggled in school myself, I mean, there's a lot that go on. You know, in the boy's mind, I don't think he really has the patience and the, you know, you don't really hold their attention long enough. That's just me now. That's just speaking from my experience with school, because I struggled coming up in school, and it really just didn't interest me. I don't think you can really say they're catering more to girls because they're learning the same thing. And then I got two sons and a daughter, and it's true. You know, when you go back and look at how she do in school versus how they was doing at her, I mean, even how they doing now, but how they was doing when they was her age, I just think it's boys and girls are just different in their way. That's just my
how
opinion.
They learn. All right. Well, thank you. Hey, it's Free Flow Friday. That's what we want. Go ahead.
I'm gonna take a different approach real quick. I do believe that it is biased. However, I found some reasons why. I have two boys and two girls. And they're between the two sets of kids is 5 years, so it was a time difference when they started school. When you walk into a kindergarten class, and you have a mostly female teachers, the little girls walk in and they have the pretty bows and their hair is done and they're so cute. And then the boys come in and boys are just looking like boys. That's the first standard. The second one, they then group them in the group of, you know, is their nose running? Are their clothes ironed? You know, and so they pay less attention because it's the visual thing that catches these teachers seem like first. And so when you have these little girls, these little sweet, cute little girls, they don't know that they're a handful. So they, to me, it already starts off biased in favor of the girl. I had to make sure, I had to work harder to ensure that my son's hair was cut, that his clothes, their clothes were ironed every day, that all of their home, they went in knowing things already. Because I needed them to, well, I didn't know that with my first son. My second son, I made sure he was way ahead of the game. Because if not to me, they do get left behind. And like I said, the little girls, they're so cute and dainty. And the teachers have really, really just gravitate towards the girls. Sometimes it's intentional. You know, sometimes it's not. It's just what it is.
True. Okay. Keto, do you have anything to say? What is your opinion on it?
Pretty much my opinion is I just think, like, I remember being a little boy, and I didn't want to sit still for nothing. I wanted to run, climb trees, play in dirt. You know, I could barely sit still enough for a teacher to try to explain something to me. I mean, now I was blessed enough to be smart enough to catch on to what the teachers were saying while still wanting to rip and run. You know what I mean? So, with me, I just think it's just that boys and girls learn different, and yes, I do think there's a bias, but it's hard to say whether it's intentional or not, just simply because of the different way, just because of the different way that boys and girls are.
Okay. Thank you. Babe, what you have to say? Oh, we have another caller. Hold on 1 second. Lily.
Hi.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
Good. Well, thank you for calling in on tonight. Your line is open, and we look forward to hearing what you have to say.
Yes, ma'am. Thank you.
Thank you. Hey, Mish.
What's up, Pastor? How you doing?
Good. How you doing?
I'm good. I'm good.
All right. Well, we look forward to hearing what you have to say on tonight. You know, we discussed this topic a little earlier, so your line is open.
Okay.
We look forward to hearing what you have to say.
All right.
All right.
All right. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Well, what I have noticed over the time that I was going to school opposed to, you know, times now, is that boys are more prone to be diagnosed with ADD, ADHD, and with the learning ability, it's just a matter of the boys' way of thinking and seeing things opposed to the girls' way of thinking and seeing things. Sometimes, you know, not all in all cases, girls do mature more quickly than boys mentally, and this will cause little boys, you know, to be 10, 11, sometimes even 12, and they still want to horseplay and wrestle and do things in school that they shouldn't do, and they have a hard time sitting still, like Keel said earlier. Then what Pastor Michelle was saying, as far as with the appearance, yes, teachers tend to do it all the time. You can have two, you can have both boy and girl, and both boy and girl can be smart, and both boy and girl can be quiet, but the appearance is something that plays. It plays a role in how teachers determine who they're going to pick as their favorite, their class leader, who's going to be the one that's going to be the tutor to help other students. And chances are it's mostly the girls. And that's just how it is. So the ADHD and the ADD, these things have become – it used to be abnormal, at an abnormal rate, but now it's like what you would consider the norm, because little boys are just so active and hyper, and they love to play. But I honestly believe it's tailored more towards the little girls.
Lily and Mish, do you all feel that schools are biased against boys, so they're tailored more for girls?
No, I never felt that way.
Okay, so
I don't see it now either. Not with the schools that Cameron and I get to. I don't see it now either. I do see a lot of teachers making referrals to people's parents about putting their children on medication or upping their doses. But I disagree with that too. They need to see a school counselor or a psychologist before they give diagnosis and call parents. But I haven't noticed it in boys lately, or at all.
Okay, thank you. So we have two that say no to the bias. What do you think, Lily? Do you have an opinion on it?
I think they are. One of my nephews, he was in like a Catholic school, and they would always. I mean, on a daily basis, to where his mom had to give out my number and other siblings' numbers, because daily they would call and say, okay, can you come pick him up? We're sending him home. And it would be because, I mean, it would be just the littlest things. I mean, his mom was like, well, put him, you know, don't you have a detention room? Why are you always, you're sending him home daily? And then when we looked at the rates of how they were responding to boys and how they're responding to girls, and then talking with other parents there of other boys, this was something that they were doing with the boys. And there are more girls that go to that school than there are boys, because finally either they would expel them or the parents would get tired of you calling me every day and me having to come get my kid because they wouldn't sit in the lunchroom and eat lunch, or they were laughing at another student. It would be something like that, to where it should have been able to be taken care of, but they were calling you and saying, okay, come get him, come get him. And they were doing this constantly with the boys rather than the girls. And my nieces were worse. They would fight anybody and any boy.
But they were focusing on the boys' behavior.
They were, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Okay, we have another caller, and I'm going to give my... Were you finished, Lily? I'm sorry. Stephen? Did you have something else?
Yes, ma'am.
Go ahead.
Oh, no, oh, no,
okay.
I'm sorry, I was done.
Okay, okay. We have another caller, then I'm going to give my opinion. Hi. Caller 8967.
Hello?
Who are we speaking with? Hi.
This is Yvonne Strout.
Hi, Mandela Strout. How
are
you?
I'm good.
We have a teacher on the line.
Yes, I saw the topic. I'm glad I saw your post because I've been forgetting. Coffee told me about your show, and I have to remember Tuesdays and Fridays, and so thankfully I was able to get on tonight, especially with this topic. I've just been trying to listen and catch up online what's being said. And I believe there's some truth in that with this the kind of the stereotype and kind of prejudging young boys. I think sometimes that is the case. I have seen, and even I've been guilty of sometimes where, oh, I have more boys than girls, and then you often wonder, how is the flow of the class going to go? But one thing I've learned in my 16 years of teaching that I learned a long time ago is you dismiss those thoughts. Every child needs to come to you as a clean slate. Regardless of what you might have heard before, although you want to get information from the previous teacher, but I think your best bet is to talk with the parents and working with the parents, but you still get to know that child for yourself. And I've learned that that's been the best way to help a child be productive. If a teacher genuinely cares about each individual student, then and the student knows it, and children know. They know when you are honest and you're real with them, you'll be able to get the best out of them. And they're going to want to learn for you, and hopefully you can remind them, though, the best thing to do is learn for themselves. And so, unfortunately, there are teachers that do prejudge, and there are teachers who don't really try to work with students. I hate to say that, being a teacher myself, but I've just seen that in my time, and I've heard from other students, you know, on what they've experienced, and even with my own children, what they've experienced. And I have three boys, and so it hurts me. And so hopefully there are other teachers that hear this or someone that will, I'm hoping, that you have to generally care to be in this profession about these children. And some of them, unfortunately, the home life, they're the way they are because of home, and that's something we can't control, but we can't control our classrooms. And so if classrooms can be a place of security and a place where they can feel comfortable to be themselves, but they know there are limits with that. And if you try to home in on their interest as best as you can, because it can be hard when you have 25, 30, 33, 35 students, and it can be difficult, but just even just giving an effort, that little bit of effort can pay off and really getting to know the kids and working with them and then telling them, I want you to have a part in this, we will find that schools can be a lot more productive. It's really sad that the classroom sizes are overloaded and all the things, the demands that are being placed on teachers. It's something else to where, you know, you're wore out in summertime or any breaks you have isn't enough, but still it can be better. We can do better by our youth, especially young boys, because now when you have, I believe, single moms, that plays a role for a lot that I've seen, where the dad's not in the picture or if dad's in the picture, unfortunately, dad is not the positive role model. And it can be tough fighting against that. But regardless, nothing can usurp genuine love for these kids. And so I'm hoping that some teachers will hear this and will know that that's where it starts. If you have young boys in your classroom, you know, that you're really struggling with, show them that you really love them and you stand firm. And I believe that it's so much easier for me because God blessed me with three sons, and so I had to learn it with them. And so I try to pass on what I've learned to my coworkers and to any other teachers I come in contact with. And they do. They need that firm hand. And even though we may not be a male, it can still work. When they know that you genuinely love them and you do care, they're going to come around. And sometimes they may make you go a half a school year because they want to see. I've seen where some students, they want to make sure I'm not going to say I love you, but then later on I disappoint you like they've seen in their lives. You know, that's all they've known. People that have told me that they love me have hurt me. They've walked away. And I've had so many stories, you know, success stories later on where they've gone on to middle school, because that's been my fear. How are they going to do in the middle school? And they've done so much better. And seeing these young boys being role models, and they're there when the upcoming fifth graders, you know, upcoming sixth graders go visit, and they're being the tour guide, you know, and being responsible. And I'm like, this is the same young man. And so I think I had a part in that along with the teachers before me. And so it's worth it. It really is worth it. And I believe that's where it starts, is with that genuine love and caring. It's just how do we get teachers to come on board with that and get past, you know, everything else and genuinely love these young men.
Right, right. That I completely agree. And I think now we, you know, when we were growing up, we had teachers, most of us. Those are the type of teachers that we had. They loved us. They were there because they had a passion for teaching. They did not have all this extra stress on them. They were, you know, they talked to our parents, and then parents were different too. Parents were different then. The teachers were different. The relationship was different. And so, you know, they were, it was a different type of involvement with the children. I know it was when, you know, when I was growing up. But now we don't see that as much. And one reason, like you said, is because of all of the demands that have been placed on the teachers with all of this testing and, you know, having to have their contracts renewed and all of that. I talked to Jeremiah prior to the show because I, too, in my personal opinion, feel like the schools are tailored for girls. And when people say that, a lot of people are saying that because, you know, the length of time they have to sit and, you know, girls can sit longer than boys and this type of thing. But I sat him down and I asked him, you know, who does he see in the class? Is it girls or boys that he sees in the class that seems, you know, to make the better grades? And he was like, oh, yes, Mom, girls, most definitely girls. And
wow.
And I said, why? He said, well, he said, because the girls, he said, they get it just like this, you know, and snap his fingers. He said, they, you know, they get it. He said, but the boys, he said, we seem to struggle. We don't get it as fast. And so he said, Mom, he said, we don't think like they think. Jeremiah's 10, and that's what he said. He said, we don't think like they think. I said, well, how does that make you feel? And he said, it makes me feel like I wish I thought like they thought. And the thing is, we
wow.
can even see that with our kids being younger, because I was talking about this the other day. I can see that even with, you know, my boys and Mariah. And Mariah is only 2, but I can still see the difference in how they think and how, you know, she picks up things opposed to how they pick up things, or you might not have to tell her as, you know, as many times, or if you do, part of the reason because she's stubborn. I mean, she's 2. But there is a difference. And so I do think, and she's very stubborn, I do think that we, and I know everybody's saying, well, her mama's stubborn. Okay. That's Michelle Kenny. Dope. You know, so I do think that we have to take into consideration the biggest thing, which is boys do learn differently than girls, because they do. And that's something that, you know, everybody's pretty much said, and that's something that we say, but we really have to, you know, as parents, as educators, we have to really take that, you know, for what it is. And I think that we have to come together to find a solution. How can we help our boys get on track, you know, where they should be, because I don't know if it's where they should be. Maybe where they are is where they should be. You know, what standards are we measuring by? Are we measuring them, you know, should we be measuring them the same? You know, that's another question. We have another caller, just a second. Caller ending in 0448.
That's Zandria Durham Quadlin.
Hey, Z, how you doing?
I'm fine, and you?
I'm doing good. Thank you so much for calling. We are talking about our boys and the education system, and you know about that. So we want to hear your input. You know, what do you have to say about that? Your line is open, so whenever you get ready, please jump on in there.
Yes, of course. I was just listening to the previous caller, and I agree with her 100%. I, too, have all boys. I had four boys, and I still feel that sometimes the teachers just can't relate to the boys, and especially our African-American boys. As my sister-in-law is actually doing her dissertation on African-American boys in the school system, and she's just finding out so much about how they, you know, they get left behind and because of their learning styles and teachers not knowing how to relate directly to them. I really think that they need to adjust their teaching style, you know, to individualize and reach boys. And like you all were saying earlier, they do learn differently than girls. And I think teachers need to be trained how to reach the boys, you know.
Right. And Jeremiah was saying he feels as though that, you know, sometimes the teachers are not as patient with them. Because if he'll ask the question, you know, if the boys say, well, I don't get it, you know, the girls have it, and the boys are like, well, I don't get it, and he feels like, you know, they're not as patient because they're like, well, I just went over it. And,
exactly.
You know, that just, I don't know, that kind of broke my heart to hear him say that. So do you all feel that? Does anyone else on the line have anything else to say about that? Should we be have another training? Should the teachers be trained differently, you know, when it comes to dealing with boys than girls?
I'm sorry. Go ahead. I apologize.
You go ahead. You're fine. You go ahead. I'm just agreeing to. You can go ahead.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
Yes, ma'am. As an instructor over here in the military, I tend to have to deal with, you know, the competition between, you know, the young men and the young women that come through as new recruits. And one thing I have noticed is that the school system is not, I don't think they're intentionally doing it. Some schools aren't intentionally doing it, and some probably just, they just don't have the knowledge and the resources as far as, like, how to tailor to the different learning styles yet. But what I had to learn and realize is, boys and girls, they're always going to learn differently. Men and women, they're going to always learn differently, for the simple fact is you have your visual learners, you have your learners that can look at somebody do something and they get it one time and boom, they're on it. And most of the time, that's the males. And then you have your readers. A lot of the time, you have personnel that can sit down and read, don't need nothing else, and then boom, they got it. Whereas, you know, most of the time the boys are not the ones that actually read right off and immediately get it. They have to go through, like, trial and error phase, and I have to do that even now with new recruits in the military, coming in the military, because most of the time when you get out to working on the equipment, the boys outshine the girls, but it's just simply because most of the time boys are tailored to be mechanically inclined, whereas girls aren't tailored to be mechanically inclined. So then I have to say that on one side of the spectrum, the girls are excelling, and then on the other side of the spectrum, the boys are excelling. So it really is a learning style, but in schools, like from elementary school on up, it seems as if it's mostly easier for, you know, girls, because the teachers are like, okay, boom, she gets it. She understands what I'm putting out. So I'm gonna go ahead and make sure I give her my attention. And that's how unintentionally boys are being left behind most of the time.
And I want to go back to something. Go ahead.
Oh, he brought up a really good point with the learning style, which is something that's been around a while in education. But I think and this would be something just to even poll teachers on, is that, you know, they talk about differentiating instruction and learning styles come into play with that. Because all the things he mentioned about with boys, that's what I see with the young man. Another one, like the kinesthetics, the hands-on, if you have, or even just conversation and talking through that, is so much better than, like he said, picking a book and reading it. I don't have very many young men who would like to, you know, who would like to do that. If I can teach a lesson another way, then it works best for them. And it's really getting back to that. And I find a lot of times teachers, like, having the time to do that, because you have this to do and that to do and that to do. So then when you go to put a lesson together, you're planning all of that, it's going to take a lot more time than one sit-down session when you take into play all your students. And then the oversized classrooms lend another problem to it. All these best practices that we have that are in place, you know, teachers, not like we don't know it and know what to do. It's given the opportunity to do it, and that's what's been tough with funding being cut. So we don't have the materials that we need. We don't have the time because, or even get to everybody like we want to because our class sizes are so huge. And so it really is a, you know, I've often wondered what is the best solution? How can we solve this and what can work best for teachers? Because many of us really want to do better by the kids, and especially the young men. It's just finding a way to be able to do that with the lack of resources, the lack of time to be able to do that.
Right. So, Evangelist Stroud, I want to ask you something, and I do know that, you know, as far as the parents, because unfortunately we do have a lot of parents that are not involved. But for those of us that are involved, what could we do as parents to help you all as teachers when it comes to, you know, helping our boys more? What could we do?
Keep communication, open, clear communication, honest communication is really best. And it goes, it can happen both ways, even with teachers, because sometimes we can fail to stay in contact with parents. But up front and honest, especially if there's any special situation with your child, or in any case, boy or girl, favorites and what grabs their interest, what have you noticed is the best way that your child learns. Things like that can really help us out. And most teachers will do a poll of their students and the interest poll and ask them themselves. Parents see so much more, they've seen so much more before they've gotten to the classroom that they have some insight that maybe the child doesn't even realize that is actually beneficial for them. So that there, wanting to work with parents, that's the thing. Like you said, things have changed, you know, now than when we were in school. You have, like, the cartoon I'm sure many have seen where you had, in the past, the parent is on the side with the teacher and they're looking at the student saying, explain these grades. And then present day, you have the parent on the side with the child and they're looking at the teacher saying, explain these grades. And so it's the lack of support. And that's what's frustrating with a lot of us is that we don't have that parent support. I mean, come to us as, and don't look at us as the enemy. You know, that's the thing. We are truly here for your child. I think now it's changed and there's some of the conspiracy theories against teachers now. And there are some teachers that really do not need to be teaching. In every profession, there's someone who shouldn't be in that profession, naturally so, but there are more great teachers out there than there are bad teachers. I'm so sure of that. And so don't lump us all and stereotype us all. Come with an open mind and come wanting to work together with us, because you'll find probably 9 times out of 10 we're ready to work with you, and that's what's going to be best. And when we're working together with the child there, that's how they're going to be successful, coming up with that plan if they really just need something, you know, special. But that's the biggest thing. Is there honest, true, genuine support with their child, and not really come and look at us as the enemy. Look at us as a supporter, as someone that's going to help facilitate your child to be a successful, productive citizen in the world, not just this country.
Right, right. Thank you. Because we do have a lot of parents that blame the teachers for everything. And that's one thing I'm so grateful for, that Kenny and I have been able to have a relationship with every one of Jeremiah's teachers, because, you know, he has been from first to fourth grade, you know, and it was hard for me to understand, even though I know my brother's on the line, and we were completely different in school. You know, we were completely different. I was the one that did my work. I didn't get in trouble. You know, I was the teacher's pet. Like, going back to what Pastor Michelle was saying, how, you know, they walk in the classroom, they have the bows, and you know, and that's how I was that girl, like Kenny was saying. I was the one that got to take the names, you know, when the teacher went out the room, and I was able to, you know, snitch on the other kids that were talking, you know, and all of this kind of stuff, because I did my work, and then I was quiet. And so that's something else people, you know, tend to believe that causes a problem in the schools because, you know, girls, they do tend to be able to sit longer, whereas boys cannot. And so then because they can sit longer, it makes it seem as though the girls are better behaved. And a lot of times you have teachers that unintentionally just got, you know, like parents that will do. Sometimes they, you know, they gravitate towards the one that seems to be the better behaved. And so that, you know, that's what happens sometimes. And so then, you know, Jeremiah, you know, came along and he got up in school and he was getting in trouble all the time. I'm like, I don't understand this. Like, because I couldn't understand. I couldn't understand, like, why are you just not sitting there being quiet? Do your work. You know, I did. But we're different. He's a boy. I'm a girl. You know, so it was completely mm-hmm. different.
Now, one thing I can say for Evangelist Siobhan, I know that you say you have three boys, and everybody, that they are very well-mannered young men. I mean, when I tell you they like they dress right, dress like some soldiers. Bro, Julius had
my
him in check. Hear me when I tell you, he had him in check. So the boys, they're so awesome. I used to love how all of them always took Jeremiah and they played with him and they made sure they kept him company. And he was in great company. But Evangelist Stroud, what I want to ask you is, with you having three boys, do you think that definitely gave you the upper hand on being able to deal with the young men of today, because you raised three young men?
Definitely. I wouldn't have it any other way. I sometimes pass. I didn't have a little girl, you know, do hair and nails with. But I see the blessing in that. I see what God was doing, because the young men that have come into my classroom, it has really helped me. I actually gravitate more to them. I can relate to the young men more than the young ladies. But I can see with the struggles, you know, I see a little bit of each of my boys. Okay, oh, yeah, that's how this one was, and this is how I handled it, worked with him. So let me see if it'll work with this student. And so it really has been a big help. I believe for anyone who may not have had a son, in this day and age, any teacher that has not had to, you know, care for their own son or even a nephew, you know, it might be a little struggle for them. Because the boys of this age, I mean, they are pretty stubborn. And my youngest, Jordan, was my stubborn one, without a doubt. And so he helped me with that type of young man. The quiet one that doesn't want to speak and open up, that's my middle child. So what can I do to pull that out of that person? And then the one that's the socializer, that's my oldest and my youngest. Okay. We still haven't figured that one out with them, kind of with their teachers, but still, how I work with their teachers, and I would try to work with the parent and with these young men, my students that I had. And so I've seen where it has helped me, give me a little edge with the young men, and it has minimized. So I don't see me having the problems. Like we departmentalize in fifth grade here, so I don't have the problem in my classroom as my teammates might have with the young men, and one doesn't have children yet. One has daughters and maybe one son. The other one had one son, so it was different. Or the other didn't have any sons at all. And so there was a big difference. I think they could manage those boys that someone might label as the problem child, although labeling is not something I like. But I seem to have more – I could manage them better. I have more respect for them. I'm like, they don't do that in my room. And I really do. I give all the credit to God blessing me with my three sons, and I learned that. I just really learned, and I apply it in my classroom.
Amen. Amen. Thank you very much.
Yes,
are there any callers that have anything else that they would like to add to the conversation on tonight?
Yeah, I do. Just based upon, you know, my experiences with my kids. You know,
mm-hmm.
I have an 18-year-old son, and then I have a 15-year-old daughter. And the maturity level, just the difference in maturity between the two is amazing. Like, when I was younger, I would, and somebody used to say, girls mature faster than boys, I would never believe it. I would never know, boys, because I'm a man. You know, of course I want, you know, men to be better. But now that I'm a parent, and I'm standing on the outside looking in, you know, girls are more mature than boys the whole from pretty much from childhood, like you were talking about Mariah, all the way up to pretty much by the time we catch up, by the time men catch up, we're probably in our 30s. You know, we're probably in our 30s, some even later than that. So for, you know, like, I completely, totally get why, you know, school, because dudes go to school to not, we don't go to school to learn. We go to school to hang with our friends and make jokes and all that other stuff. I mean, I get it. It's, you know, and after seeing it with my own children, you know, like the maturity, when if I'll put it to you like this, if me and the wife leave somewhere, the 15-year-old's in charge.
Wow.
So it's, you know,
wow.
It's just the maturity level. You can see it because I have it right here in front of my face, and it's amazing. Like, I never, as a man, never would have believed it, and I would have argued it to death, until I saw it with my own eyes with my own children.
Word.
Yeah.
Thank you. I appreciate
that. I agree with that, man. So I agree with that too,
go ahead,
man.
Bro.
Cause just watching my daughter, you know, just watching my daughter and my three sons. I got three boys, and just watching them, you know, it just like he was saying, man, it amazed me how Jazz caught on to stuff, catch on to stuff so fast. And with the boys, it's just like you have to drill it into them. And then that could come, you know, with Jasmine, like, she loves to read. So in her free time, you might catch her in the room reading the book. Well, with the boys, they either outside running around, or they on the video games, or they on their phones. Or some going to catch their attention. And looking at Jordan, my youngest son, his attention span is even shorter than the other two. So, I mean, like, you just tell the difference. And I know when I was coming up, you know, I can remember a time where, I mean, I think it goes to you have to find something that catches boys' attention, too. Because I remember one time we had to write a paper. And I know Quad remember this. And me and their teacher almost went to blows because I wanted to write about Tupac. You know what I'm saying? But she didn't want Tupac. She didn't want me to write about Tupac. And I'm like, if I'm going to do the paper, then you can't tell me who to write about. Like, you telling me to write about somebody I admire at that time, look up to. And I chose Tupac, and she's going to tell me that wasn't appropriate. Well, then it came to the point where I'm not going to do the paper. I take the zero because you ain't going to tell me who to write about. You know what I'm saying? And after a while, it took her a while. You know, she called my mama. We went to the office. Like, we went through the whole nine. And, you know, and eventually she came around. And then the same thing went probably a couple weeks later. We had to write about a plant. I chose marijuana. We went through the whole drill again. You know what I'm saying? So I just, you know, I think you have to be, I know some of that stuff might have been it might have been inappropriate, but then once she seen where I was coming from, you know, because I didn't write about, you know, once she saw where I was coming from and once she sat down with me and just actually took the time to see why I chose those things, why I chose Tupac, why I chose that to write about, then she opened up. And like I was saying, you know, you have to, sometimes you have to sit down and see where the child is coming from.
I'm glad you brought that point up, because instead of quickly dismissing, ask why, you know, what is the reason? And you had a, you know, perfect angle, something she didn't think about. And so she had to go and say, oh, go ahead and do it. So never assuming. Because I was even wondering, I'm like, now, why did he do that? Was it a mess with her this time around? But no, you had a purpose and a reason for it. And so that's what, as teachers, we can be guilty of that, you know. And it's something to learn, you know, be mindful of, you know, is when we give a child a choice, when we give students a choice, the whole purpose is for them to do something that they're interested in so that they can do their best work and they can see how great they are. And the greatness that's in them, you know, the abilities they probably didn't know they had. But sometimes we'll dismiss if it doesn't seem to line up maybe with our own personal beliefs or what we think. And we got to remember, you know, that it has to do with the student and not us. And I think sometimes that's where we can get caught up because of so much, and we'll start being more wrapped up in how it affects us and forget we're here for the student. And that's probably something that she realized, and that's something I try to keep forefront for myself, that I don't get self-absorbed. And remember, it's all about the student and not about me. So
absolutely.
It's a point to bring up for teachers.
Yes, it is. And you know, Evangelist, I'm glad you're on the line, you know, because you definitely have been a testament to the point of where, you know, social media has taken and given the teacher and faculty such a bad name in black eye, because they see the students, and you have teachers that are going in on the students because the student is being disrespectful. And I think part of that plays along with, you know, the home front, the demographics of the home front. You know, if you have young men that are growing up in homes without their fathers, that can play an issue for causing them not to know how to respect a male teacher, or it can cause them to disrespect a female teacher. But one thing I can say definitely as an instructor for the past, what it'll be 2 years this month coming up, is that they have this concept of where we're creating critical thinkers, opposed to trying to actually move into, you know, we're honing in on each learning style, but at the same time we're making critical thinkers and making them think outside the box. So the person that says they're hands-on, they can do other than hands-on. And the person that's, you know, visual and can sit down and read a book and get it can also become hands-on. So you're actually doing them a great service to pull out that potential that they have in them, to show them that, hey, you can do the things that you thought you couldn't do. So very, very good points, though. Very good points, Evangelist Stroud. Thank you.
Keto, everybody.
Oh, I'm sorry, Keto. My bad.
Do you all feel that we as parents and educators can play into boys feeling intimidated by girls? Anybody?
You know what? Can I say something? Boys feeling intimidated? That's interesting.
You know, I wanted to say that I think that what goes on in the home definitely reflects on how that child acts at school or wherever they're at. I did classes, like therapy classes, at a juvenile prison. And I work with the girls a little bit, but I work with the boys more. And the girls, you could see what went on in their life in the past as they were younger. Their mind frame was, okay, now I'm getting ready to create what I didn't have. And they're quick to get pregnant. They're quick to be in these different relationships because they're trying to create what they did not have. The boys, I could see how their mind frame was completely different. It wasn't, okay, I'm going to create what I didn't have. I didn't have this, so now this is my time to go back and have this. I didn't have that childhood, so now I'm going to go back and I'm going to have this. And at 18 years old, you're clowning around and you're doing what you feel like you should have been doing at 14. And, like, the confusion was so much in the boy's mind where they'd be like, okay, well, it's my mom and my sisters at home. And my mom would always say, I'm the man of the house. So
right.
I have to be in charge of this house. And I have to, and these boys were looking in, even at, you know, young ages, 5 years old, oh, well, you're the man of the house. You got to look out for your sisters. You got to look out for me,
mm-hmm.
You know. And they're looking like, I have to be this protector. And they're taking on something that they don't know, they don't understand. They're putting so much pressure on these boys. And then sooner or later, then you bring a man in, and now they're confused. This man is
right.
saying he's the man of the house, however temporary it is. He's saying he is in charge now. So now where does this place this child, this boy who should have been in the boy's place in the first place? Now he's confused. Am I a child again, or am I the man of the house? And there's so much confusion within their thinking. And I always tell people that even those ones, those tough ones, and at nighttime, every one of them slept with they slept with one of those little stuffed animals. Yeah. As big and bad as they were, I don't care what they were in there for, shootings, there was some in there for rapes, molestation. They all slept with a stuffed animal at night.
Mm.
And it's the mind frame of how much you're putting on your kids of what position they're supposed to be in. And they're really confused. I think that plays a huge role in what kids are doing and how they're acting even when they go to school. They're the man at home, and then when they're at school, you wonder what's in their mind and what they're thinking. Can they really concentrate on school? Can they really sit there and do this? Are they still in that protective mode when they're seeing other things going on? I do believe that a lot of it has to deal with what you're telling your child at home, what position they're in, what they're supposed to be doing, and who they are.
I agree.
I saw that with my oldest when my husband was deployed. It was his second tour, and at that time, my oldest is probably third grade, and I remember that was said to him, you know, Dad's gone, you know, you're the man of the house. And it wasn't until maybe about fourth or fifth when he shared how that kind of put, you know, pressure on him. He felt pressured and then trying to hold up to that standard. And I'm so glad he shared because didn't realize that, you know, we were just nonchalantly saying it. You know, he's the oldest, you know. But he took that seriously. He took that role seriously. I got two younger brothers. I have my mom. And I didn't realize what that had done to him. And so I was so grateful that he shared that. And we were like, oh, we need to stop that. And I had to apologize. I'm so sorry, you know, because I didn't realize you were really taking this on like this, sweetheart, you know. And no, you shouldn't have to feel that responsible, you know, as if you got to really do everything Dad did, you know, while he's gone or anything like that. And so that really helped. We caught it soon. But, you know, so I can only imagine if it had to continue, because there were still a couple of more deployments after that, you know, that it could have been worse had we continued with that. And so I've kind of seen how that, you know, what it can do to a young man when you say that to him. And thankfully in this case, though, Dad's in the pictures as he, you know, because of his, you know, his career at the time, you know, he just wasn't there. He, you know, I could see where that, you know, just from seeing firsthand where how that can affect a young man, and that just breaks my heart to think, you know, when you share that, I see that image of them with those stuffed animals. Man. And it is, I think, unnecessary pressure is put on a lot of kids, or home life does affect them. We see it in the classroom. And I have a student now that, because mom's out of the picture, really, and he kind of wants to blame himself, but, you know, I think that the thing when it comes to his teachers is hard for us because his view of women and the lack of trust. So I think even now he's just trying to see, can I truly trust you? Are you genuine? He's one of those students where I probably have to go half a year before he realizes that I'm genuine, that, you know, my teammate, you know, we are genuine in our love and care for him, and we do want to see him do well. He's a great student, he has the knowledge and everything, but there's just a lot of hurt there with him. And so, you know, that trust issue, I believe, is a big thing to fight through with him. But you have those that think that they have to be grown, and so they come in grown with you, and then they're only 10 years old, you know. And and you have those that have the resentment so much, you know, that as teachers we got to try to break through to get to the student, you know, and get them to want to learn, because they're wrapped up with all that at home. How do I get them to forget about that? Realize this is a safe place for you. And I believe a lot of kids don't feel that, so you have them, and that's what was brought up about what you see on social media and the way teachers are taking these kids down. And no child should have to be manhandled like that. But, and so I often wonder, what did you do beforehand to build a relationship with the student so it wouldn't even get to that point? You know, you have some teachers that feel they have to be so hard and so tough. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, you're mirroring what's at home, and that's what they want to get away from. That's why they're angry inside. That's why they act the way they act, because of that. They're trying to find someone that's going to respect and love them. They're not getting it at home. And so hoping maybe you as a teacher, but then when you're coming off at them and mouthing off at them and openly rebuking them and all up in their face, how are you going to tell me to respect you if you're not respecting me? That's what they're seeing. And so there's a lot of education, you know, we mentioned about, you know, teachers and training for teachers, young boys, just in general. Now it's like a whole different training that teachers do need on handling that. I'm not sure what's actually in teacher programs now for that. I don't know if it's just in special education programs where you might have that, but it really should be something for just even general education, period, to be able, how to work with kids like that, you know, because more and more, that's what we're seeing in classrooms. Home has a greater effect on the child than the teacher does, and I'm seeing that more than ever. I always thought I had a greater influence because the child's with me more, but in actuality, they really are at home more than they are with the teacher, and home has a greater influence on them than the teacher does, but still, that doesn't mean, still the time with us doesn't necessarily mean that we can have a positive impact and let them realize it doesn't always have to be like that negative at home. It can be better, you know, and so hopefully they can get away and school is their escape and realizing if I just grab hold of this, stick with this, and with these people that love me and my family, these are my other sisters and my other brothers, and here's my teacher, my, you know, my extended mom or my extended dad. If they love me, they care for me. I can do better, and I can eventually get away from the life that I have now. You know, that's what I'm hoping will happen as kids come to me. I only have them for a short time, and they still have 7 more years of school after me. But I know that I could say something. I may not see the results now by the time they leave me in May, but it might click with them 10th grade. It may click for the graduate. It might click, and that it could click, and that's my hope that it will. It's going to stick with them. There's one thing, any student that's had me, they're going to remember me. I'm not the crazy teacher. I just love having fun, and I have my childish moments. It's going to be a joyous place. Kids are going to enjoy coming to school. I said, we are a family, and that's what we do. We look out for one another. We take care of one another, and I don't have favorites. All of you are my additional children. Come to me, and that's what teachers have to do. Make sure that that's where we are, because kids need that now more than ever, because you have parents that just aren't in the picture, and education is not important to them, and more parents are saying, you should get it at school. You need to be getting it at school. You know, they don't help the kids at home. And so teachers, we got, now it's a different training for teachers, because now it's like, what can we do if you do not have that parent support? What are some things I can do to help this child be successful? What do I do when a parent wants to blame me? You know, how do I handle that? That's what teachers need more on now, you know, is someone to help them in situations like that, and to be ready for that. Because ultimately, that child's success is what's important, regardless of who that child is and what they come to you with. Whether, like I see, you know, one of the questions about the ADHD diagnosis, or they come to you, you know, with autism, they come to you with learning disabilities, or they come to you and they're gifted, or they're just, you know, hey, they're just right, you know, right there, you know, they're just right on target. You know, it's different, and it's a lot, because a lot of teachers just want to teach. I think it's like, I didn't sign up for this. No, we didn't, but this is what we have now. And so we got to figure out a way to work it best, because ultimately these children are our future. If we want this country to stay on top, we got to make sure the future is thinking on top, like the critical thinking. That's what I do. I want you to be a thinker, a critical thinker, and a problem solver. I might teach reading and language arts and social studies to you, but in all of this, I'm going to make sure you are a critical thinker. You are a problem solver. You can think for yourself. You have a mind of your own, and you don't have to go with every way the wind blows. You know, you can stand your ground for what you truly believe in, and hopefully you believe, you know, something that has some sense of respect and morals and values and integrity. And I give them that speech right up front. I said, this is where I'm at. This is where I'm coming to you from. So I'm going to stretch your brain. I'm going to make you work, but it's for your good, so that our country can stay great, so that you can be productive and successful in life. And that's what I leave them with, and then we go forward, and they see Ms. Strauss says what she means, and she means what she says. And so they have some moments where they finish through, they've done something marvelous, but they hit it, show is hurting. But they're proud of themselves, and that's what I love. I'm sorry. I'm so sorry, you guys.
No. We're glad you called in, because it's great to have an educator on the line.
Absolutely.
And I have other friends that are educators, and they say a lot of the same things that you're saying, and that's what we need. We do need more. First of all, you guys, my other friends, they are saved as well. So we do need more people in there that, you know, are saved, because when you are living for Christ, you know, you have a different understanding of love and things like, you know, those, you know, godly ways. And we need people in that care for the children. And it's sad that we do have so many broken families, so the dynamics has changed, you know, as for what you all are up against now. Because, you know, we have a lot of younger parents, even though we, you know, we had younger parents before, but they, I don't know, they just thought different. But now this generation just thinks different. You know, I call it this new age parenting style that they have. So when people see, you know, like our kids, our friends' kids, my brother's kids, you know, when people see our kids, they're like, oh, my gosh, you're so well behaved. You know, it's like a they stand out because you don't see that anymore, like your kids. And, you know, people don't see that as much. And so our kids stand out because it's not the norm. It's sad to say, you know, but the yes, ma'am, the no, ma'am, the yes, sir, the no, sir, the, you know, somebody tell you something, you better do what an adult says, you know, that it's not the norm. It's just not the norm anymore. And so it does make it harder just overall. And like you said, you were talking about before, the overcrowded schools and classes, and that was one of the issues with Jeremiah last year, because you do have, you know, there were so many kids in the class, and he was struggling in some areas. Plus, he was acting up himself, you know, doing his own thing. And so he really struggled. He did. He struggled. This year has been a lot better. He has a male teacher, and I prayed for this, y'all. I am so serious. I prayed for this, and I said it out my mouth to my husband, to my mama, to my friends, and God answered my prayer. That Jeremiah needed a teacher that was like Kenny. And Jeremiah came home and said, Mama, Mr. Pierce, he's like Dad.
You know, boys, they have done better with male teachers.
Yeah, well, he's definitely like Jared. You know, Jared he's a middle child. He's more, you know, he's calmer. So I think he would do good, you know, with a female teacher. Mariah, female, but you know, somebody that can kind of get with her. That's what she's gonna need. She's gonna need somebody that can just kind of get with
her.
Firm
but loving, man.
But Jeremiah, definitely, he needs that male figure. He needs it at home, and he needs it at school, and it's been working for him. It's working for him. And so, you know, that's something else we definitely have to be in prayer about, you know, our kids being in the right classroom with the right teacher that God, you know, has equipped for them. And that's what I've learned as a mother, as a parent, to do, to pray about that and to really just take that to God and believe that he's going to do it. And he did. He did it this year. And Jeremiah got his little report yesterday, and a teacher said he's always good in class and always gives it. Like, I don't think have we ever gotten a report since, like, first grade? Like, oh, no. You know, it was really a breather. I mean, you know, Ken and I, we're still kind of on edge. Like, is this going to change at any moment? But, you know, this is the longest that we've known. So I'm feeling kind of positive. I want to ask this last question, you know, for just to see what you guys think. Do you all believe that classes, that boys would do better if classes were segregated? Do you think they would do better? Just an opinion.
It all depends. Because if there are more boys and they're like them, it wouldn't work.
True.
You end up with a classroom of class clowns, it can be tough. One thing they feed off of each other. Like the group of boys we have now between in fifth grade, who helped the teacher I'm teamed with. She came up for fourth grade, so she, and so she had some of them deliberately split. So she put down, you know, they read better off in a different class, and they have performed so much better. And one of the young men is on our team, and he, it's like she go, it was like total day and night. It's so different. And you, when she talks about him, you could see where she just, the tears well up, because she goes, he had a, you would have thought there was no hope for him. And she said, and now he's excited. He has been busting out A's and B's like nothing. He wants to learn. He doesn't have the distraction from the other young men. And then the other young men are doing well where they are because they are not with each, with the others that they fed off of. And that goes the same thing with girls. I've seen that where we've had to separate girls and they've done better. And so it's like a hit and miss with that because it all depends on the personality of the kids.
Thank you. I appreciate that answer. Anybody else? Anybody else have an opinion on it? Yes, no, maybe.
Somehow we're
going
to get
thank you. When I was young.
Go ahead.
I said when I was young and in school, if I would have had our boy class, I probably wouldn't have went. You know what I'm saying? I don't think they should have. I mean, you know, I'm just saying, just being for real, you know, just, you know, a lot of the females, they wanted to call me to go to class. Being, you know, I used to like being around females, and you know, sometimes they would get me to actually sit down and do my work. So if I would have had a class with our boys, then I probably wouldn't even went, you know. But that's my opinion.
Well, thank God for them females, because I tell y'all, my brother, God bless him. His God, Mama, rest in peace. She used to try to work with you. She was a teacher. And my mom had, you know, she was working with my mom to try to help him, and I tell you. But now he is in college doing very well. He's outshining me with the GPA, y'all.
Uh-oh.
So, wow. Yes, I thank God for the females. Anybody else? Any opinions on it? Nobody? Anything?
I think that a big piece is getting class sizes smaller, not so much maybe the segregation as it is the number of students.
Absolutely. The teacher-to-student ratio.
Funding.
Yes.
But education has to be considered important to those people who make the laws and who make the decisions on funding. You know, I see so many different parallels with other countries and why students seem to be outshining students here. Well, education, you know, teachers, I believe the last one I saw, they're right up there where with doctors and lawyers with that group. They're important, just like that group of people are those professionals. And I don't see it that way here in our country. I really don't think that educators are as valued. Example, a coworker in Colorado when I was there, she was doing a training, she shared where with her husband, they were at one of the military balls. Her husband, I believe, was an officer, and they were just doing introductions, and one gentleman had asked her what she did, and she said, I'm an educator, I'm a teacher, and he said, there's nothing wrong with that, and she said, I looked at him and said, I didn't say there was anything wrong with it, but that's how people think. They think teachers is like, well, those who can't teach, and really that's like, well, you can't do anything else, so just be a teacher, as if it's so easy to teach. And that's an insult, because it is not. We don't just throw information at kids and make them memorize it. You've got to know every child individually. You got to know what strategies will work for this child, what strategies will work for this student, what will not. And then and all that I have don't work, what else can I do? Where else can I go? And you got to do this. You got to do that. And there's a whole lot that goes into it. And it doesn't stop in the class time. You go home with your work. You work on the weekends. We might have holidays, but we're still working on that time. We try to rest, but we're always working, and the summers don't go that long because we're already starting back and doing things over the summer, making purchases, maybe doing lesson plans, tweaking what we did before. It is a constant thing. It's not, I just go in, I do my 8 hours, and that's it. That's not teaching. And then the teacher that does that is not being very effective at all, because you really have to sit back and reflect and think, and what can I change about this? Let me get feedback from my students. It's not just throw information and expect them to learn. It's not. you know, because it's not, you're not going to be effective that way. And so we've got to bring up, for kids to be successful, young men, young women, overall, you know, we've got to value education more, because unless someone taught you, you're not going to know. Period. You can't learn anything unless from personal experience. But you have to have teachers that help you along the way to get to that point. And that's the foundation of everything, is our knowledge base. But it doesn't seem to be valued as much, because in a sense, teachers save lives like doctors. Because the knowledge mm-hmm. that we give kids, that a lot of kids will say, because I had a teacher that cared because of this, I would have been here. I probably would be one of the statistics, but I'm not, because I had teachers that cared, and that carried me through. You know, they helped me to realize I could be better. And any person could do that, not just a teacher, but when you're there in front of that child, you know, August to May, you know, or September to June, whatever the case might be, or with the year round, regardless, you know, you really do have some kind of impact. You're right there next to the parent. And you know, so help us in some way, whatever you can, you know, but cutting funding education, cutting funding, you know, then I'm going with police officers and all of that. We really do important things and think that's not important. It just baffles me. But you can vote yourself a race. I'm just kind of baffled with that, you know. And so then anyone thinks that it's okay. So there's a way to do it, getting people to do it. So I just continue to pray. God touch the hearts and minds of those that make the decision. That's all we can do. And it'll work out. But until then, we go on. There are a lot of us, a lot of saved teachers out there, and I believe that's why things are held together, because God has us strategically placed where he needs us.
Mm-hmm. That's right. He has equipped you for it. And we thank everyone for calling in tonight. This was a wonderful show. I do want to pick up on Tuesday with talk. I want to go into the ADHD and the ADD. This is ADHD Awareness Month, and so I would like to go into that. Some people believe that it's not real. That's what some people believe. I believe it's real, but overdiagnosed. That's just my personal opinion. You know, I would like to go into that for us to really discuss that, and even, you know, relate it back to dealing with it in the classrooms, and how, you know, what should we be aware of? How can we help it, you know, from our end as far as dealing with it in the classrooms? And this has, again, been a wonderful show, wonderful, wonderful, wonderful show. Share it with anyone that you know it will benefit from it. Please share it. Get the word out. We really need to talk about these issues, come together, because the only way we're going to make a difference is if we do come together. So, you know, Evangelist Stroud, thank you for all that you do in education, for working with our, you know, our young people. We appreciate you and all the other teachers out there listening. We thank you guys. And we do have to keep praying. We have to get out and vote. Now, yeah, the vote, you know, is coming up. I know we have a hard decision, but, you know, sure we're registered and, you know, even be prayerful about that, because this is the craziest I've ever seen. But, you know, get out and vote, and let's do what we can to make a difference. Get involved, and those of us that still have young kids with PTA and things like that, and even if your kids are older, you know, there's still something that, you know, we all can do to help make a difference and to make things better for our children as they're coming up in school. And next month, I want to do a show on foster and adoption. So I want to go ahead and put that out there. If you know anyone who's considering it, if you know anyone who, you know, who has, please, please let them know. That's something that I would like to talk about, because we definitely need to see more of that. Anybody that knows me knows that's my passion. And so I want to talk about that, because that is part of the problem. You all also have kids in the classroom that are in foster care, and they're going from house to house to house to house, and, you know, no stability. So that is something else. That's another issue that, you know, that we deal with. So I'm going to go ahead and end it here, babe. Did you have anything?
I'm good. I thank everybody for calling in on tonight.
All right. Well, we thank you guys, love you guys, and we pray that you all have a wonderful weekend.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night, everybody.